Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. For the first time in 30 years, Los Angeles teachers are out of the classroom and on the picket line.
We are the teachers!
We are the teachers!
The mighty, mighty teachers!
The mighty, mighty teachers!
Fighting for students!
Fighting for students!
And for education!
By any measure, the LA teachers' strike is monumental. More than 30,000 teachers in a district that serves more than 500,000 students. Teachers are demanding smaller class sizes, more nurses and librarians, and higher wages. The LA district says it can't afford it. But just as the wave of teacher strikes in other states last year, the Los Angeles walkout is forcing a deeper question about how public education is funded in the United States. So this hour on Point, Los Angeles teachers on strike. And you can join us. Are you a teacher? Do you share the concerns of Los Angeles educators who are on strike right now? Parents, what do you make of the teachers' demands? And about this bigger question about how we fund public education, what improvements can we make? What do you think? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And I just want to let you know that a little later this hour, we're going to be checking back in with an education union organizer from West Virginia about how teachers are doing in that state a year after the massive West Virginia teachers' strike there. That, of course, was the strike that got things going in quite a remarkable year in terms of educators and collective action last year. So that'll be later in the hour. But first, let's go to Los Angeles, where Howard Bloom joins us. He's education reporter for the LA Times. You can link to his reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Howard, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. So this is day two of the LA teachers' strike here. Give us a sense as to how's it going so far. I mean, the numbers sound huge. Is it as gripping to the city of Los Angeles as it feels from afar, just by looking at the numbers?
Well, it is to me because, of course, I've been covering it every waking hour, and it's actually day three. And it's funny, the people can't decide whether to cover this incredible deluge of rain we're having or the teacher strike, but the rain has not daunted the teachers. It's just a sea of umbrellas at these rallies. So if you're near a school or you're near a teacher's rally, the impact is huge. And of course, if you're a family, you have to figure out what to do. Most families actually are not sending their kids to school so far, which is an interesting situation in and of itself.
So tell me more about that. Why is it interesting?
Well, first of all, you have to imagine schools without teachers, mm-hmm. librarians, nurses, and counselors, because the union represents all those folks. So they are not at school. So, and you have 31,000 folks in the union, and to replace them, the district has brought in, the last estimate we had was 400 substitute teachers and 2,000 reassigned people from central and regional offices. Many of them do not have teaching credentials. They're just warm bodies. And so the kids are kind of being warehoused. Now, they do have software programs, so they have computers. Kids can do things on computers. You could argue that at some moments the nation's second largest school district has become the world's largest Cineplex because they're showing lots of films. And for many parents, it's just, you know, if they don't need the child care, and actually a lot of people do, they say, you know, we don't need that. We're not sending our kids to school. And the first day of the strike, about a third, probably less than a third, actually, of the students came to school. And when that happens, the school district is losing money. It's bad for the school district. In a way, it's not great for the teachers either, because there's less money to go into a teacher settlement. But that's kind of the picture.
Okay. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later with both a member of the United Teachers for Los Angeles and also a member of the LA Unified School District Board of Education. So we're going to hear those voices in a minute. But Howard Bloom, tell me, I mean, as you point out, this is day three. I mean, what are we hearing from policymakers, from lawmakers in Los Angeles, in Sacramento, about how long this could go on? Has the strike made any difference yet?
Well, of course, as we talked about, it's made a difference in the lives of a lot of folks, and the teachers would argue that they want to make a long-term difference in the lives of a lot of the families. So, you know, the LA Unified, one of their arguments is that, you know, they don't have the financial spigot. They don't control that. The money is funded through the state. And so their argument is that we're giving you what we have. If you want more money, come with, join with us, and let's get more money from the state. And the union contests that, and you know, we can get more into that later. I'm sure the advocates on each side will as well. But they also are trying to change the conversation at the state level and push, you know, push policy at the state level. And we have a new governor, and he is sympathetic to that, and we're kind of waiting to see what may come out of the state budget. It was actually a good year for tax collection, so schools are going to get more money anyway, and some of that money could be available to help nudge the parties to a settlement. There are also issues over charter schools that could be dealt with at the policy level, and certainly L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti is definitely trying to resolve this matter as a mediator behind the scenes. I mean, I guess one could argue it's his civic duty as the mayor, but also if he has any interest in running for president, he certainly cannot announce a campaign while there's a big teacher strike in his city. So there are parties that are trying to resolve this. We haven't had negotiations for several days, partly because the teachers union leadership, there's only so many people in that leadership, and running a strike and having all these actions, it's kind of taken up all their time. Mm. But I think they're just about ready to go back to the negotiating table.
Well, Howard Bloom, education reporter for the Los Angeles Times, stand by here for just a moment, because let's turn now to Gloria Martinez. She's with us from Pasadena, California. She's elementary vice president for United Teachers of Los Angeles, the main union for the LA Unified School District. She served as a general and special education teacher in the school district for 18 years as well. Gloria Martinez, welcome to you.
Hi, Magna. Thank you for having us.
It's great to have you. So first of all, I mean, tell us in the most concrete way possible, I mean, what are the conditions in LA classrooms that have brought teachers to this point, to be willing to strike citywide?
Well, the conditions at our schools are pretty dire. Overcrowded classrooms, lack of technology, and a fundamental need for resources that our teachers can turn to when students are facing issues that, you know, teachers are just not equipped to deal with. And we need nurses and psychologists and social workers to help our students thrive. And what we find ourselves having to do is to advocate for services and having to fund our classrooms out of our own pockets, and as well as try to manage our classrooms with 40 plus or 30 plus. In my biggest class at a special day class, I had 18 special ed students and ended up writing 21 IEPs. That takes a toll on you. And I think our students' learning also, you know, is impacted by overcrowded classrooms. So it's been decades in the making. It's been ignored for far too long. California, not that long ago, sat at 48th out of 50th in funding and educational funding. And that, you know, has impacted our classrooms and our schools. And we're at a point where enough is enough, and we're ready. We've never been more organized. So this is a fight we plan on staying on for the long haul.
Hmm. So tell me, I mean, we'll talk about sort of the funding, the specifics of the funding situation in a moment, because obviously that's underlying all of this. But I'm still eager to hear more about what's actually happening in classrooms, because about that overcrowding or high student per teacher ratio. I mean, I was reading that that a previous contract that LA teachers had signed allowed for up to 39 students per classroom, but that the district had upped that number. And so that's why we're seeing some places with more than 40 students perhaps per classroom. Do I have that right?
So the number 39 was something that was just recently proposed as of last Friday. The contract language is Section 1.5, which allows the district to unilaterally increase class size due to financial emergencies or dire financial situations. The problem is that the district and the school board get to control the narrative around, you know, how much funding they actually have. And we don't get to see the hard numbers until after the school year. So it, you know, we can't We can't fight class size as long as 1.5 is there. We can't enforce what's in our contract as long as 1.5, that language is in there. So that's one of the pillars of why we're out there. And it's one of the reasons why we need to stay strong so that we can actually enforce class sizes.
Well, so as I said, we're going to hear from a member of the Los Angeles Unified District Board in a couple of minutes here. But Gloria Martinez, let's get down to sort of a basic question here, because yes, I mean, I'm seeing here that California spends about $11,000 per pupil per year. That kind of puts it definitely not in the top half of U.S. states. And I suppose people are saying the irony is that California as a state has the fifth largest economy in the world, right? So the presumption is that here's a state that could spend more but isn't. Now, if that is indeed part of the problem here, I suppose a lot of folks might be asking, why are you striking now versus advocating wholeheartedly in Sacramento? The problem is with state government and its funding for students versus perhaps specific issues you may have with the Los Angeles district.
Well, I just want to say that what we've proposed is not just, you know, class size. We have a lot of proposals that actually improve learning conditions and working conditions for our members, learning conditions for our students. The reason why we are striking and the reason why this is multifaceted. So, first of all, we have been in Sacramento, and I'll get to that in just a minute. But the reason why we're striking and calling out the school board is because they're sitting on a $1.9 billion reserve. And we know that this school board is backed by the California Charter School Administration. And we see a plan here to starve our schools, under-resource our schools, and then privatize our schools. So this is bigger, right? This is asking people to make an investment in public education in Los Angeles.
Well, Gloria Martinez, stand by here for just a moment. Gloria Martinez is Elementary Vice President for United Teachers of Los Angeles. Howard Bloom, Education Reporter for the LA Times. Hang in there as well. We're talking about the LA teachers strike following on the heels of numerous teacher strikes across the country last year. What do you make of what LA teachers are asking for? And is there a better way for us to fund public education? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the teacher strike going on right now in Los Angeles. More than 30,000 teachers on strike there in the nation's second largest school district. I'm joined today by Howard Bloom. He's education reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Gloria Martinez is also with us. She's elementary vice president for United Teachers of Los Angeles, the main union representing teachers in the Los Angeles schools. And let's listen to a little bit of tape from LA here. This is third grade teacher Mariana Mitchell Cusack. She told Los Angeles CBS affiliate KCAL9 why she was on the picket line in the rain on Monday.
Smaller class sizes and definitely more counselors and more nurses. We have way too many children who have IEPs, individual educational plans, and we don't have enough support for them.
So this isn't just about pay?
No, it's never about pay with us. That's what we knew when we got into teaching. We were not going to be millionaires. It's about the children.
That's L.A. teacher Mariana Mitchell Cusack. Well, on Monday as well, Superintendent Austin Buettner told KCAL 9 that the district simply cannot afford to meet all of the union's demands.
They've been asking for the same set of things for 2 years, unchanged. The state, an independent expert sent in by the state, the county regulator who oversees us, has said we cannot do more. They've said we're in very, very difficult financial straits, so we can't afford everything they're asking for. Sort of, you go into a restaurant, do you order everything on the menu? Probably not. You order the food you can eat that you can afford to pay for. We want to do better.
That's Los Angeles Superintendent Austin Buettner. Well, joining us now is Nick Melvoin. He's also with us from Pasadena today. He's vice president of the Los Angeles Unified School District Board of Education. He also taught 7th and 8th grade in L.A. for 2 years. Nick Melvoin, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, let's get right to this assertion that L.A. teachers are making, that the school district does have, what, $1.9 billion in reserve, and that that money ought to be used to support teachers, to reduce class sizes, to get more librarians in there. Why isn't that money being used, and what do you buy of this argument that the money is there to support students and teachers in L.A.?
Well, Meghna, it is being used. Actually, every dollar of our surplus is allocated over the next few years for the teacher demands and to fund our annual deficit of $500 million. One of the ironies is that when I got onto this board a year and a half ago, we were already in the throes of negotiations. They had been ongoing for a few months. We knew we wanted to give teachers a raise. We knew we wanted to do what we could to lower class size, and yet we didn't have the money set aside. And so we started building up some of this surplus, some of this reserve, so that we could fund these demands. And now the teachers are turning around and saying, you have this historic reserve. You know, it's important whether you're an individual person or an organization to have a little savings. Actually, our new governor just increased the state's historic rainy day fund because he's worried about a recession. I was a teacher who was laid off those 2 years by the district because we were in the throes of a recession. So it's important to have a cushion. But the real irony is that hundreds of millions of dollars of that reserve are set aside for the 6% raise we're offering teachers, half of which is retroactive to last year. Hundreds of millions of dollars to hire now over 1,300 counselors, nurses, teachers to lower class size. And then again, to fund this deficit. And as you heard from our superintendent, the county just came in last week and said, we're going to appoint a financial advisor, basically a babysitter to this board, so you don't continue to spend money because you can't fund ongoing expenses such as salaries with one-time funds. I think here, the elephant in the room, you know, and maybe that's the wrong analogy given we're one of the bluest states in the country, but California in one generation has gone from the number one per pupil spender in terms of per pupil spending to 44th out of 50. And so as long as 90% of our funding comes from Sacramento, we can't spend what we don't have. And I think the other issue that is not being talked about enough is the growing pension and healthcare liability the district has. We have a $15 billion unfunded liability for employee health care. And so about 30 cents of every dollar right now we spend goes to health care and pensions. In a decade, it will be 50 cents. And that's money that's off the table for class sizes and nurses and counselors. And so we have to have these honest conversations with our teachers as partners and then join them in their march, as you mentioned earlier, Meghna, up to Sacramento to demand more funding for our schools.
Well, so Gloria Martinez, let me get your response here. I mean, you hear Nick Melvoin saying that, you know, even as the district has this $1.9 billion reserve, it's a one-time fix for structural problems. I mean, if indeed in a couple of years, 50% of what's spent in LA schools is going to go to pension and health care benefits that have been promised in previous contracts, how are you going to pay for that?
So just a correction. It's not 50%, right?
No, 50% of our budget in a decade will be on health care and pensions.
I'm sorry, I thought you said 50 cents. I was wondering.
50 cents on the dollar, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So what, you know, the unfunded liability line, it's hard for us as Americans to say, you know, I'm almost bankrupt because I have financed a home and bought myself, and now I have a mortgage, right? We know that we need to fix this long term. The teachers of LA recognize that this is a bigger problem, right? What we will not accept, though, is for the district to say that we have to have a reserve. By the way, the state only requires a 1% reserve, and currently the district has a 26% reserve. And we have looked at these documents. The district's own financial statements have shown a surplus of money all the way back to 13-14. So we go back 5 years, and for the last 5 years, we have heard the district say, this rainy day is coming, this rainy day is coming. And for the last 5 years, there has been no rainy day. There has been, what has been happening is a willingness to hoard money and to underfund our schools. And what we're saying is take that money, invest it into our schools, and then, yes, let's continue to fight for funding from the state. Let's continue to fight funding nationally for IDEA.
You know, Magna, if I may, too, I mean, I think it's... As a school board member and a former teacher who agrees with Gloria on so many of these noble endeavors, my classes were too high, and I'm glad that UTLA, which has agreed, you know, put that Section 1.5 in the contract 20 years ago and has ratified it, you know, every few years since, is ready to say, okay, let's have the real class size discussion. But I don't see the motivation for a school board whose sole job is to improve outcomes for kids, 84% of whom are living in poverty, only 30% of whom can do math, only 40% of whom can read at grade level, is to hoard money. I mean, it doesn't pass the smell test. You know, we are allocating every dollar to make sure that LA Public Schools don't just continue to operate, but really thrive. Out of 100 kids who graduate LA Unified, only 12 will go to college. I ran for this board because that's unacceptable. And so the idea that we're somehow sitting on money, keeping it so that our schools are, you know, quote unquote starved is just, you know, it's a silly argument that maybe is motivational in these few days, but it doesn't help with the underlying question of this huge liability, a $500 million structural deficit, and the fact that California ranks near the bottom of states in per pupil funding. So you asked Howard, I think, earlier about what are the teachers getting support. And my question for the folks who are tweeting from Sacramento or Washington is, are you going to back that up with support? If you're tweeting in the state capitol, are you going to actually fully fund our schools? If you're tweeting in Washington, are you going to fund our special education costs?
So let me I'm going to give you another chance to respond here, Gloria, in just a second. But Nick Milvoin, I want to just ask you a specific question. I mean, Gloria had earlier said that she and her fellow members of the teachers' unions, her words were they see a plan in place to starve public schools in Los Angeles in order to eventually privatize them, I presume, through charter schools. So, I mean, that is a very specific complaint that they have. Are you just rejecting that outright?
I'm rejecting it outright. You know, since I've been in office, not one new charter school has opened in my district, in District 4. We are working with our teachers' union and our parents to remove kind of some of the bloat from the bureaucracy, put it back in schools, invest in our local communities, which is very similar to the union's community schools plan. I look forward to working with Gloria and her colleagues to do just that. This idea that there's some nefarious plot to, quote unquote, privatize the district, you know, charters have grown in LA. All of our charters are nonprofit public schools in LA, but they've grown because the district has failed to meet the needs of its constituents. You know, we have flight to private schools, charter schools, other districts. And my goal, and I think it's Gloria's goal as well, is to say, let's reinvest in our local district schools. Let's get families back because our local schools are the best, not because they have no other option.
Right. Well, but of course, I mean, a counter argument to that is that charter schools have flourished because the public schools themselves have been underfunded and undersupported. Gloria, let me just allow you some space here to jump back in. What do you say?
Well, you know, the unregulated charter growth drains the school district $600 million. And you're absolutely right, Magna. When we speak to parents, and just to say, if there hasn't been a charter school that's open, it's because of the organizing and because of the efforts of the teachers and the parents that are coming together to really call out this sham, to privatize our schools in LA. So when I speak to parents, and I have the luxury of going all across the city in Los Angeles and speak with parents and speak with students and speak with teachers, the number one reason why people are leaving is because of large class sizes. It's because we need more art and music in our schools. It's because because of this perceived safety, that smaller class sizes are somewhat more manageable, right? And there are services that families need in our neediest communities here in Los Angeles. And if the district isn't, you know, putting up that money and some of that money of $1.9 billion to fund social workers in areas that children are homeless, in areas that children are wondering where their next meal is going to come from, if we're not investing into social workers, if we're not investing into arts where students are, you know, maybe not the brightest student in math, right? But they're definitely these musical geniuses, these artistic students that need to be developed, that need to be inspired. If we are cutting our resources, right? If we are overcrowding our classrooms,
yeah.
I can't help but to call that out.
Yeah. Well, Gloria Martinez and Nick Milvoyne, stand by here for a second. Howard Bloom, education reporter for the LA Times, you've been waiting so patiently on the line there. I very much appreciate it. Be our arbiter here. I mean, we're hearing very passionate, specific arguments from both Gloria and Nick here that seem pretty diametrically opposed. I mean, how do you read it? How do you see it?
Well, one thing here that we see is, and they are passionate advocates for their sides. I know them both, but there's a lack of trust here, and there's a lack of trust because of the past history. There were bitter battles for control of the school board between supporters of charter schools, and the union was the other major funding source in these elections, the most expensive elections in any school board in the nation's history. And these bitter divisions have created a lack of trust. And, you know, part of what Gloria is referring to in her fears about the worst that could come from the school board and the superintendent is that the district hasn't shared its reorganization plan. You know, they've been developing this plan with consultants for months, and the union is assuming the worst about it. Now, on the district side, I think Austin Buettner, the superintendent, would say that he doesn't feel that he's a good faith partner in the district. In the union, all the union wants to do is criticize him and you make a target out of him. So maybe he's reluctant to put this plan forward because he feels the union would just try to shoot it down. And this lack of trust has colored these negotiations. And, you know, the union, in striking now, yes, the source of money is Sacramento, but one reason the union is striking now is because this is when they have their leverage, right? This is their contract. They have a bully pulpit here. So in some ways, the district is not the target of the union action. It's lawmakers in Sacramento. But the strike can't go on forever. At some point, it has to be solved,
right?
And people who have a lack of trust have to start talking to each other.
Well, Howard Bloom, education reporter for the Los Angeles Times, thank you so much for joining us, and I'll let you go so you can get back out there and report on this enormous story. Thank you, Howard.
Sure.
Gloria Martinez and Nick Milvoyne, hang on here for just a second, because we do have a lot of callers who want to join us, and I want to at least let some of them in. Let's go to Adam, who's calling from Akron, Ohio. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I just want to state, in the teaching profession, first off, LA has my support and understanding because for many years of my teaching career, I've worked in underfunded classrooms. And I think there's a misconception about what teachers do when we don't have those resources. We spend a gross amount of time at home trying to figure out how to reach students of different learning levels without the resources we need. And then we end up reaching into our own pockets to fund our classroom. At the end of the day, we are all there just to help our students and to get them where they need to be and create a better future. And it becomes very stressful and very difficult to do so when you are trying to buy resources out of your own pocket. None of us knew, we all knew we weren't going to be rich being teachers. The issue is we're less rich than we need to be because we're funding our own classrooms.
Mm. Well, Adam, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Robin, who's calling from Martinsburg, West Virginia. Robin, you're on the air.
Thank you. I basically want to say that I work for an excellent school system. I'm retired. I still have dreams about going to school and not having enough desks for students after 8 years retirement. But I see this issue as a societal value conflict. If we look, where do we put education up there? It's probably up at the top of what's important to most people, and yet let's look at the attention and funding and that kind of thing. And that's where I think the conflict is. Secondly, we don't have teachers involved enough in decision-making, But again, I think as a nation, we need to reevaluate where, you know, if do we put our money where our mouth is. That's it.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for your call. Nick Melvoin, let me turn back to you on that. I mean, you hear what Robin said. How can L.A., the city of Los Angeles, do better about putting its money where its mouth is for public education?
I think she's so spot on, and that's what I was alluding to earlier. As people around the country, you know, mostly in Washington, our senators and our elected officials in Sacramento are tweeting their support. Well, you know, in Washington, there's the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. It's funding for students with special needs. And the mandate from the federal government is that they will reimburse 40% of districts' costs. They're right now at about 13.5% around the country. So hundreds of millions of dollars a year that we're not getting from Washington to support our students with special needs. And yet they're tweeting their support for teachers. Same with Sacramento, where we're near the bottom, 44 out of 50 states in per pupil funding. I see a lot of elected officials in LA tweeting their support, and yet their kids are going to private school or school in other districts. So I think we do need to put our money where our mouth is. If we're going to tweet our support for teachers, we need to tax our support for teachers, and we need to make sure that we invest more in our schools than we do in our prison industrial complex. In California, we spend about 7 times as much on an inmate as a public school student, and then we wonder why our schools aren't better.
Yeah. Well, Nick Melvoin and Gloria Martinez. Gloria, I'll come back to you when we have to, after we have to take a very quick break here.
Sure.
We're talking about the Los Angeles teacher strike going on right now in LA. And of course, last year we had a wave of teacher strikes across the United States. So once again, there's this question: what is fundamentally broken about how we fund public education in the United States? Got a lot of comments coming in online. Chris V. 28 says, how is it that our wealthy nation can afford tax cuts for the wealthy and incredibly expensive military system and not be able to adequately fund our teachers? Bruce Shapiro says, in 1970, I was a student in high school in Los Angeles. That year, the teachers went on strike for precisely the same reason. What's changed? Things seem to have gotten worse. Send us your comment at Facebook or Twitter at On Point Radio. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Stopping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Los Angeles teachers strike going on right now and what it means or what it tells us about the challenges we have in funding public education in the United States. And by the way, we should note 98% of unionized Los Angeles teachers voted to go on strike. So near unanimous agreement that this was the collective action they wanted to take right now. And on Monday, kindergarten teacher and 21-year veteran of the LA school district, Maria Gonzalez, told NPR why she's on the picket line.
We have to care. We have to acknowledge that these are children of color. These are children that they receive free reduced lunch. The nurse and the psychologist are oftentimes the only healthcare professionals they're in contact with.
That's kindergarten teacher Maria Gonzalez. At a press conference also on Monday, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti urged the two sides, the union and the district, to reach an agreement.
I've been working around the clock for not just days, but weeks on the issues that are at the heart of these negotiations. This is the time to make an agreement. There is not much that separates the two sides. And there has been movement towards what the teachers have demanded and what the district can afford.
That's LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. Gloria Martinez, you're elementary vice president for United Teachers of Los Angeles, the union here that's on strike right now. I hear Mayor Garcetti saying there's not much that separates the two sides, but in the course of this conversation, it seems like there is quite a bit. I mean, what would it take to, what do you think it would take to advance negotiations right now?
Well, I think what we want is to have a partner that really is willing to be honest. You know, we haven't been able to get the folks from the district sitting across the table to admit to, you know, information on their own financial statements. We haven't been able to make movement other than a proposal that would give us a 1 year relief. Nick mentioned the approximate 1,300 additional positions are only for 1 year. So negotiations that last 20 months should fruit a contract that is longer than 1 year. It should fruit a fix that is longer than 1 year. And it really is going to require the district to admit, you know, that they keep hearing this rhetoric from three folks, Nick being one of them, Monica Garcia and Austin Buettner, saying that the money isn't there. But when I sit at the table, no one else is willing to say that to us or, you know, defend their or demonstrate their methodologies of how they came up with their figures. So what we want is a real investment for long-term saving of public education in LA. And that's going to take listening to our demands and coming to, forth with something that lasts longer than a year.
Well, Nick Melvoin, let me turn back to you, Vice President of the Los Angeles Unified School District Board of Education here. So Gloria has said repeatedly in the course of this conversation that teachers are asking for a commitment to an investment, a deeper investment in LA schools. Now, and I've also heard, we've talked about how the majority of the funding for Los Angeles schools comes from state government in California, from Sacramento, and there's pressure to be applied there. But I'm also, I want to ask you specifically about, are there other sources of revenue to support LA schools that the district either is unwilling to look at or hasn't given serious enough consideration? And here's why I ask, because back in 1978, the state of California passed Proposition 13, right, which essentially capped property taxes here. But, you know, cities and towns can pass local exemptions to that or increases in what's called the parcel tax in California. And I'm seeing here that there was a suggestion in 2018 in L.A. to put an increase in the parcel tax on the ballot in June. But according to Joseph Zekula, a teacher who's written in the Huffington Post, he says that motion was voted down by the very same school board members who voted to hire the current superintendent. So he asks, why didn't the school board vote to pursue new money from voters if the financial situation for the district is so dire?
So these are great questions. You know, first, we need to clarify because we need to be talking about facts here. And I wish Gloria was right that it was the district saying this about our budget and not our state regulator, our county regulator, four or five independent commissions going back a decade saying that we're running out of money. We have asked the union to bring in their own auditors to look at our books, and they've refused. The idea that this is a narrative or somehow we are hiding the ball is just not true. And one glance at the LA Times will tell you that. I also think it's not true that we're not at the table right now. I appreciate this conversation with Gloria and wish our negotiators were having it now. The union walked away last week and we're trying to get
them
back.
That's true.
To your point, Magna, though, it's exactly right. Yesterday, we advocated the County Board of Supervisors and we just got $10 million secured for nurses and for counselors. You know, Gloria mentioned the one-time investment, but as everyone's acknowledged in this conversation, a reserve is a one-time investment. And so we hope we can work together to make those ongoing commitments. We have supported, along with the union, what's called a split-roll property tax measure to reform Proposition 13, which, as you said, is really the source of our disinvestment. The union actually delayed and put that on the 2020, not the 2018 ballot, I think in part because the presidential year we're going to have higher turnout and we really need to organize the way the teachers have been doing.
But that would be statewide, right? That would be statewide.
The other thing we're talking about is also a partial tax. 2020, I think, you know, the district has never successfully passed a partial tax, in part because the threshold is actually 67%, not 51%. We are talking and we'll put one on the 2020 ballot.
In Los Angeles?
Our thinking when we looked at when we looked at polling, 2018 wasn't going to be successful. We agree with the union that 2020 is a high turnout year in a blue state. So that is the conversation we're having now with our union members and with our parents, which is let's take this advocacy and let's do the split roll measure to reform Proposition 13. Let's continue the Sacramento advocacy. And yes, let's do more locally. And we're going to be talking about that partial tax. We are talking about that partial tax. And just last week, the board voted on a revenue strategy.
Okay, so Gloria, go ahead. I'm sure you have a response to that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to say we didn't delay that Schools and Communities First Act. We actually asked the board and, you know, Austin Buettner and his multimillionaire buddies to give us money to help qualify earlier. And at the end, we had to make a strategic decision. And Nick's right. You know, 2020 is going to be big for California. One thing that we are, you know, this parcel tax, if folks want to propose language that we can look at, that'd be fantastic. But we also don't want anything that has a regressive tax on it, right? Our families are suffering enough. It's Agreed. Hard to live here in California. It is hard to live here in LA. Teachers can't afford to live in the communities that they serve. And I just want to say, you know, the LA County money, the $10 million, I appreciate Nick saying, you know, that they went to the county to get that money. But I just want, you know, I want to push back a little bit. We did that. We've been talking about nurses for years. We've been saying, you know, sending kids to offices for makeshift ice packs and having kids sit with tummy aches. You know, I teach in elementary. Tummy aches are a real thing. You know, in the office for hours because there's no nurse, right? And our office staff is overworked and, you know, understaffed as well. So, you know, I'm glad that Nick is using our talking points. You know, I'm glad that he read our flyers, but we're the ones that are out there asking for these services. We're the ones. The teachers are on the front line, and this is what we've been advocating for years. So,
and,
you know.
And Megna, I think, you know.
I just want to let Gloria give her a chance to finish her sentence. Please. and then go ahead. But go ahead and finish up, Gloria.
Well, I want to give credit where credit is due because our teachers are, you know, are out there every day making miracles happen in this city. We make learning happen under tough learning conditions. So, you know, just to say we've gone to Sacramento, we're thinking of this. No, we've been doing that. We are the voice of all of these students and all of these families. And I just will not allow for someone just to claim it. So I just needed that to be said.
Okay, go ahead, Nick.
Well, I appreciate that. I think this is really some of the crux of the issues that you heard Howard talk about with trust. It doesn't matter to a school child who secured your funding for nurses. And so I'll be the first to say humbly, let's give credit to that money to nurses. Let's give credit for some of the recent tax increases in California. I think it's this us versus them mentality that is really keeping the two sides apart. My interest, and I was a UTLA member and a teacher, is to secure more resources for our kids. We actually have 42 paid nursing positions that are unfilled because of the nursing shortage. So let's work with our union to figure out how to recruit more nurses. This isn't about credit. And I'll be the first to admit that teachers in this country and in this city have not been given maybe ever the respect that they deserve, the salary that they deserve. And so I didn't mean to suggest that this was at the detriment of the union's efforts. It's just, I think this really gets at it, though, and you see this maybe hostility of a zero-sum game. It's not. When we get nurses in schools, kids win. When we are supporting our teachers, kids win. When California goes from being the 44th state to even the 40th state, kids win. And so that's what we're trying to do with the school board, and our teachers are invaluable partners.
Well, you know what?
Effort.
I have to say that, Gloria, Gloria, forgive me for interrupting you this time. I really don't mean to, but I'm going to need to wrap up this conversation because we're going to check in with a union leader from West Virginia because, it was West Virginia teachers that really got sort of a national movement going last year. And I just have to say, like, given these bookends from West Virginia to Los Angeles, we haven't found the answer yet, but there's still this overriding question of, like, if, as everything Nick has said, when kids win, America wins, we got to find a better way to fund public schools. And that's going to be my editorial comment to wrap up this conversation right now. So Gloria Martinez, Elementary Vice President for United Teachers of Los Angeles, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, Megna. Thank you so much.
And Nick Milvoin, Vice President of the Los Angeles Unified School District Board of Education. Nick Milvoin, thank you as well.
Thank you, and thanks to Gloria and her colleagues for awakening the conscience of LA to this.
Okay, so that's...
It's been a long time coming.
That's the situation in Los Angeles right now. And as I mentioned, in February and March of last year, teachers across the entire state of West Virginia went on strike in response to chronically low pay and high health care costs there. It was the first in what became a wave of teacher strikes. We saw them in Oklahoma, in Colorado, Arizona, and other places last year. And in March, at the end of what was a successful strike, we spoke with Dale Lee, president of the West Virginia Education Association, about what he hoped would happen next.
what I hope the lesson learned from West Virginia is that their governors and their legislators will do the right thing and make the investment in education now before it gets to the point where we had to what we had to do in West Virginia.
Well, since it has been a year since the West Virginia strike, let's check in with Dale Lee. He joins us now from Charleston, West Virginia. Dale Lee, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you back. So it's been a year since the historic strike in West Virginia. Have conditions improved for teachers there?
Well, they have. We have our governor announced in early October that we were continuing the investment in education with another 5% increase in pay for all state employees, for educators, for teachers, service professionals. And remember, health care was a huge issue for us, and he was putting another $100 million into our health care. At the end of the strike last year, we created a task force to look at health care and to really come up with long-term solutions. The task force continues. We've made some really good recommendations. We're waiting on the legislature to pass those recommendations from the task force at this point. But we are making progress. But just as was said earlier, you have to continue the investment. You don't make a one-time investment in the future of your kids. You make a continued investment. And when we continue to invest in education, our children are the winners, and our children are the one who prosper from all this. That's why it's so important what they're doing in L.A. and we've done all across the country.
Mm. Well, I remember talking to you last year, and we talked about how the average pay of a West Virginia teacher was around $45,000, which was $13,000 to $15,000 lower than the national average. And one of the issues that you were facing in West Virginia is that teachers just needed to drive over state lines to other states and they'd get paid considerably more. And so there was a shortage of certified teachers in West Virginia. Has that situation gotten better?
Well, we still have the shortage. It's going to take more than just a one-year influx of $2,000 to help that. But we are seeing more of our younger teachers very interested in staying in West Virginia now. And if we continue that investment this year, that should be another 5% pay raise coming in front of them. We will have moved beginning teacher salaries from $33,000 to over $37,000 in 2 years. And that will help us be competitive with our contiguous states. We're more concerned with our contiguous states than we are the national average, because we're bordered by five different states, and they can go across the border and make more money. This makes us competitive with them.
Right. So, but it sounds like overall that a year after the strike from last year, the situation is improving in West Virginia. So Dale Lee, let me ask you, that was the catalyst, really, that sort of unleashed this big movement across America. We saw teacher strikes in so many other places, and now the giant district in Los Angeles. I mean, looking across this past year, did you think that this is what you'd spark from what your action in West Virginia?
You know, when you make that courageous step to step out of the classroom, you don't think about what it's going to do nationally. As we've had time to reflect, we are very proud of the fact that we have led the movement from West Virginia. We're looked at in a different light as educators in West Virginia now. People look at us more with respect and admiration for what we've done. And like I said at the end of the strike with the interview with you, I would hope that other states and governments learn from this. Apparently they haven't. That we have to continue this. When are we going to make education a top priority? When are we going to make educating all of our children, not just a select few, but all of our children, our number one goal in this country, and fund education like it should be funded?
Well, Dale Lee, president of the West Virginia Education Association, he helped lead last year's teacher strike in West Virginia, speaking to us once again from Charleston today. Dale Lee, thanks so much for coming back and giving us this check-in on how teachers and schools are doing in West Virginia. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me, and we wanted the teachers in L.A. to know that West Virginia fully supports them in their endeavors.
Well, thanks again, Mr. Lee. You know, this issue of education and supporting teachers and the myriad numbers of ways we can support American students is a huge one. So go to onpointradio.org and let us know what you think. And when you're at our website, you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter right there on the homepage, where you get behind-the-scenes looks at what goes into making this show. You'll also get some messages from me and my colleague, David Folkenflik. And by the way, On Point is produced by a terrific team. Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amato, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, and Alex Schroeder. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.